Thanks again for joining us for today's MSDN Geek Speak, Local Messaging and Silverlight with Brian Lagunas, hosted by Glenn Gordon and Mithun Dhar. With that, I'm going to go ahead and hand the floor off to you, Glenn.
Great. Thanks very much. And welcome, everybody, to another one of our highly interactive and fun Geek Speak episodes. As mentioned, my name is Glenn Gordon. I'm a developer evangelist with Microsoft based down in Atlanta, Georgia. And my co-host on today's Geek Speak is my colleague in Seattle, Mithun Dhar. Mithun, how's it going?
Hey, Glenn. It's going great. How's it going with you?
Pretty good. I've been following all the Worldwide Partner Conference announcements this week. Pretty exciting stuff around Windows 7 and Windows Phone and Xbox even. It's pretty amazing.
Hey, that reminds me. The Windows 7 beta, SP1 beta, is available right now. So, folks, it's a good time for you guys to go install the SP1 beta. It's also available for Windows Server 2008 R2.
That's true. Good stuff to take a look at. So Mithun and I are developer evangelists, and in that role we spend a lot of time speaking with user groups and presenting at conferences, and we meet quite a few folks out in the community that are really gurus in a lot of technology areas. And the GeekSpeak series is an opportunity for us to bring those folks onto a webcast and then connect them with you, all the live attendees, so you can ask them real-time questions, and we can have conversations and have some fun demos. So just to put some faces with the voices, this is me and Mithun, and we've got our blogs linked also at the end of the slide deck. So if you download the slide deck, you'll be able to visit our blogs and ask us questions and follow along with some of the events that are coming up in the local community. And so our guest today is Brian Lagunas, and Brian is from Mithun's neck of the woods, right? Somewhat.
Yeah, so as a developer evangelist, I focus in the Pacific Northwest. I cover Washington, Alaska, Idaho, and Oregon. And Brian's from Idaho.
Well, great. Let's bring him on. Brian, how's it going today?
Doing good. How about yourself?
We are good. So we've got your bio up here, but why don't you give us a brief glimpse into, you know, what brought you to the tech industry and what specifically to Silverlight, and then we can sort of ease into the topic today with messaging and Silverlight.
All right. Well, just to correct a slide there, during the process of getting this webcast set up, I have actually gained new employment with a different company called Gale Manufacturing Company, which what they do is they manufacture steel for construction.
Ah, okay.
So, well, I got the WPF and Silverlight basically as a line of business developer with URF. We had specific needs that we felt that the technologies of WPF and Silverlight could solve for us better than ASP.NET or a WinForms based product.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I kind of got introduced to it, and I have just been buried in it ever since.
And I understand from the bio and then from talking with Mithun that you've been active at a lot of the community events, user groups, and code camps?
No, that's correct. I give presentations often at the Boise.NET Developer User Group, the Boise Software Developer Group. I blog on Elegant Code and then I cross-blog on my own website. I also give presentations at Boise Code Camp and Tech Fest yearly.
Awesome. Well, we're glad to have you on. And so our topic today is local messaging and Silverlight. And we try to keep some of the topics to be specific areas and not do too many presentations on, you know, Silverlight in general. So in this particular one, I thought it was pretty interesting because it's a scenario a lot of people aren't using. And, Brian, we were chatting a little bit before the webcast about people just don't realize this is the kind of thing you can do with Silverlight. So why don't you give us an idea of what you can do with local messaging and what it means when you have, you know, multiple Silverlight controls on a page?
All right. Well, first, let's start off by defining exactly what local messaging does for you. What it does is it enables you to create a communication channel between multiple Silverlight plugins that's running on your computer at one time.
So that doesn't even necessarily mean within the same web page, right?
No, it can be different web pages.
Cool.
Even out of browser. You can communicate out of browser or out of browser to in browser.
Oh, wow.
So, for instance, suppose you have a Silverlight-based navigation system for an otherwise HTML-based website,
mm-hmm.
You could use the local messaging to, say, have a navigation bar synchronize its state with a Silverlight-based sidebar.
Okay.
Or if you have, for instance, rotating banner ads, how many times have we seen those?
Oh, I see some pretty amazing ones where the, you know, characters kind of jumping out of one and into the other across the page.
Exactly, and that is the exact scenario that local messaging can solve for you as well. And, you know, if you take a step back, especially for line of business developers, I think this is the biggest feature we can have is because, you know, with LOB applications, you're normally confined within a single browser.
Right.
Well, lots of people have two monitors. It's kind of hard to tear off a tab and just, you know, work in two monitors. Well, now this enables you to have either two completely different Silverlight line of business applications, but communicate through the communication channel if they're open, if they're not, so you can kind of pick and choose how you implement this.
Wow, that's cool.
So, Bran, is it like basically the local message sender class, right? So that's what the guts of this is?
Yes, exactly that.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. And I'd like to remind all the listeners here, this is a completely question-driven show. So feel free to type in your questions. We'd be happy to bring you in and get interacted with the speaker here.
Cool. So, Brian, do you have, like, a couple of demos to kick off and get the conversations going?
Yeah, no problem. Let me go ahead and share my screen here.
Now, just a context set, you've got what version of Visual Studio up there?
I have Visual Studio 2010 Professional,
okay.
And I'm running on Windows 7.
Okay.
Awesome.
Okay.
Now, this also what you're showing, that's not specific to Silverlight 4, right, or is part of it?
No, it's specific to Silverlight 4, and actually it was in the 3.0.
Oh, okay, great.
Okay, so when you want to do local messaging, there's two things you really need. You need a sender, and you need a receiver.
All right.
Okay, so let's go ahead and just code one up right quick. I'm going to create a Silverlight app. I'll just call it Sender. Yeah, we'll need a web page to post this in. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go ahead and code up a very simple UI. All this is going to have is a text box and a button. A text box to contain my message and the button to spit my message.
Are you, do you prefer typing XML in or XAML in directly?
Yes, I do. I just feel I have more control that way.
Well, with the new designer support, it's pretty cool because you can see it in action right as you type it.
Oh, yeah. Blend is wonderful. You know, it's hard for me because I'm not a designer, but to go into that mode. But, you get more comfortable with it as you use it. I use it for the real complex stuff.
Right.
I'll put my text box in here. I'll give it a name.
Okay. And a reminder to folks who are watching the demo, you can press F5 on your keyboard to see the screen in full screen view.
Put a button in here. And, of course, we're going to need a button click event on our button. This is what's going to execute when we actually send the message.
Okay.
Okay. So the first thing we need to do is we need to add an import statement, a using system.windows.messaging. This is the namespace in which our classes we're going to be using today reside in.
Okay.
So since this is our sender, we need to create an instance of our local message sender. Now, get rid of some of that stuff. What I want people to pay attention to is our constructor overloads we have available. So this one constructor takes what's called a receiver name. Now, this is not the name of the receiving application itself. This is just a unique name that you give the channel, if you will. This is your channel name.
Okay.
And they have to be unique or you will get collisions. Okay, so in this case, I'm just going to call it my receiver. Okay. Now, the second parameter here is called domain. Now, when you create senders and receivers and you're talking about uniquely naming and scoping your channels. So scoping says this name is unique across these domains, across this domain, or across any domain. So you can scope it down to a specific domain that you're looking for. So if I wanted all of them, I'd just say global. That is the same as just using the first constructor there. So either one works.
Okay.
In our examples here, we're not going to worry about scoping anything to a domain.
So basically, each endpoint will require a unique name, right?
Yes. Okay. So now, we want, when we click this button, we want the text in our text box to be sent. That's even simpler. That's done with the send async method here.
Mm-hmm.
All you do is pass in our message. In this case, we're getting it from the text box. And that's it. We have now created a sending application that will send out this message. Okay, well now,
wow,
we need a receiver. Let's go ahead and add another project here.
Oh, that was really simple, in less than 10 lines of code.
Exactly.
3 lines, actually.
And if you have a designer that does UI for you, it only took you about 2 lines of code.
Yeah.
Now, this is a completely different project you're creating.
This is a completely different project.
Okay.
Okay, this is called Receiver, and this UI is going to be even more simple. This is going to be a text block that shows the message that I get, that I just sent. And that's all I'm going to put in here. So now let's go to our code. Once again, we need to add our system.windows.messaging namespace.
So the receiver has to specifically opt in and write code, I mean, have code written to do this. You can't just have a Silverlight control that starts taking over other controls, right?
Correct. You have to specifically register for that communication channel.
Okay.
In this case, you can guess what we're going to create, a local message receiver.
Hmm.
And remember, I called it my receiver. This also has a couple overloads on it. You can give it a scope, like I was talking about. In our case, it's global. We're not worried about domains. If it was a domain, if it was domain-based or domain-scoped, you would just put in an ionumerable of type string of the allowed domains.
Mm.
In our case, we're not going to worry about that. Okay, so we've created our receiver. And just for simplicity's sake, I'm just going to stick it in here. So, in order for you to do anything with a message that you receive, you have to handle an event. And that's called the message received event. Okay. Now, the event args on this event gives you a couple of things. It gives you the message that was sent by the sender, so this is what you're receiving, and you know, you got your name, scope, receiver name, sender domain, and response. We'll get to response in a minute, so don't worry about that right now. But right now, we just want to say message. And in my case, I want to set my UI to the message. Now, there's one more thing we have to do. We have to tell the receiver to start listening on that channel.
Mm.
There, I've just instructed my receiver to start listening on the my receiver channel here. So anything that sends a message to my receiver will get that message here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I also noticed you don't need to use a dispatcher or anything. You can go right to the UI.
That's correct.
From that event.
That's correct. And I do want to note that you can create multiple receiver and sender objects. Each receiver can receive messages from any number of senders. Each sender, however, can only send messages to the receiver identified in his constructor.
Hmm.
If you don't have that, you're going to get naming, you're going to get conflicts. You're going to say, oh, this receiver's already been registered. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
If it doesn't make sense to our attendees, please chime in with questions. We'll get lots of clarification.
All right, so I'm just going to go ahead and build these guys so they show up in my web project. And let's go ahead and create a nice little basic HTML page. There's the browser file. All right, and we know we're going to have our – so this is just a basic HTML page. There's no ASP.NET, no server-side code, none of that stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put a place for our sender, and we'll put a place for our receiver.
And we have our first question from Chris, which is there a way to do a broadcast sent to multiple receivers at once?
No, you can't do that, and I'll tell you why. Because if you notice on, let me go back to our sender here. You see this send async? That happens asynchronously, so you can never guarantee the order in which a message is sent.
Oh, okay.
All right, so I'm typing all this stuff. I'm just going to go in these test pages and copy out the necessities. That's my sender.
I think a lot of people forget that you can work with Silverlight independent of any server technology.
I would agree with that statement.
And I think once they realize that, then it opens it up to a wider variety of server-side technology you can connect it to.
You know what just happened?
Hmm.
Luckily,
you can't even do. Can you do run without debugging?
Yes, I can actually. What happened is right before I showed this webcast, I got prompted to upgrade my Silverlight. the runtime that's in the browser. So we'll just do that. Okay, so here's my sender.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna type into blah blah blah.
There it is.
I sent the message, the receiver received that, and did something with it. Okay. Now that the receiver's got the message, let's say you want the receiver to notify the sender that, hey, I really got the message. Well, that's pretty easy to do. Remember that response property I showed you guys in the receiver?
Right.
That's where you handle that.
Yeah. So,
in my receiver, I'm going to say e.response. In this case, I got it, right? I got a message. I did something with it. Some process occurred, and I'm sending off a response, and I did what I needed to do with it. But now we need to enable the sender to handle that response. In order to do that, there's another event we have to handle. It's called the send completed event here. Okay. So, right quick, let's add one element to our sending application. Just add a little text block. Give it a name. A response. So this is just going to tell us what our response was. So in the send completed event, the event args have a couple properties for you. The one we're concerned about right now is the response. There we go.
So Joseph's asked a question about a coding style you're using with the Lambda.
Oh, yeah. So instead of a lot of people are used to this, message sender dot event of some type, if I can type,
mm-hmm.
and you create a new event handler this way.
Right.
That's what most people are used to. But this is basically using a Lambda expression to create that event handler on the fly in one line. So this is equivalent to just setting the event handler like that. It's the same thing.
Ah, this is much smarter. Okay.
Yeah, it's a little cleaner if you're not going to use that event for anything else.
Yeah, so either one would work.
Okay. David's got another one here. He says, do I understand correctly that anyone who knows the name of your channel and or domain can send messages, undesired, invalid, or even malicious, to your receivers?
Yes.
Mm.
And there's a follow-up question. Are there any patterns or practices to ensure that message is coming from a trusted sender?
There is. There are ways to do it. For one, these names you make unique. You can get, it could be your application ID or some type of GUID. So, you know, I guess it's security by obscurity, right? You can also send a state, not with the message, but the sender. We come down to our send async. We have an object user state. And this allows you to pass a user state. It could be any type of object. It could be Booleans, IDs, it doesn't matter what it is. But you can also use that to identify a message, but it won't be on the receiver side.
Hmm.
It's only going to be here that you can access that.
Right, because when you fire off multiple send asyncs and you get the completed, you need to figure out which one just got completed.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go ahead. I think I built these guys. I'll build them again just in case. And now I'm going to type my message, send it. My receiver received that message, did something with it, and told my sender he's done.
Mm.
And there it is right there. Now this example, I'm showing it all on the same page. Well, it's also perfectly acceptable to shrink these up for you guys.
Now we run into the limitation of doing a webcast with a low screen resolution.
So now I have my receiver and my sender in separate windows.
Mm-hmm.
It works still. It doesn't matter because it all happens on the local client.
What happens if you have multiple windows of the receiver?
You mean like multiple tabs?
Yeah, or just multiple instances open.
Okay, now remember what I said about the receiver. If you have multiple, you can only have one instance of a receiver listening on a specific channel.
Ah, okay.
So you would get a conflict. And let's go ahead and watch that happen. There.
Ah.
A receiver, only one receiver can listen on a single channel. But a sender can send on the multiple senders can send on a single channel. Does
okay.
that make explain that correctly?
Yep. That's good to see it in action, because in the real world, you'd want to put some try catch statements around that.
Right. Yeah, remember, this is demo code.
Right.
Okay. So another, I think, one of the greatest advantages of local messaging, because people who do messaging with Silverlight normally use the HTML bridge, which is perfectly fine. It works. But a limitation of the HTML bridge is that it cannot work out of browser.
Mm.
So let's go ahead and make one of these guys out of browser app.
Let's talk about that HTML bridge for a minute, because that enables similar scenarios where you may want Silverlight to update some HTML in a div on a page or call a JavaScript function, right?
Correct. That's correct. You know, it's very similar, and you can do just about the same thing. I find that working with the local messaging API is just a lot easier.
Sure.
Than dealing with the bridge or even sockets at that point. I mean, technically, you could use sockets as well.
Right, right.
And Eldon's got an interesting thought here on one of the questions. The fact that this is local messaging should limit security risk, correct?
Correct.
Is there? I would assume that there is not a way to sort of run a Silverlight app on somebody's machine and it's a sniffer that's listening for messaging traffic. I don't think there's a way to do that, right?
You know, I really can't think of how that would happen. I mean, the user would, for one, they would have to be listening on a specific channel. They would have to know the name of the channel and domain.
Yeah.
Two.
Now, on the other hand, you could potentially download the Zap, which is the Silverlight. Couldn't you pick that apart or use Reflection to figure out what the message channel is?
Well, right. That's a come. You would want to somehow encrypt your message, your channel, things like that. Just like you can encrypt messages as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you're really worried about security, you definitely can encrypt messages.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and enable this sender to run out of browser. Now, I'm going to get an exception, so I'm expecting it, and I'm going to show you the fix. Okay, so the sender is going to be an out of browser app. Go ahead and... Oh, my goodness. Should have upgraded my Silverlight.
Control F5.
I don't know if that's gonna work now. Yeah. Try it. I get the exception I'm looking for. Oh, there we go. Good work. Well, I did get an exception. I don't know why, and I'll tell you why I was expecting an exception. So let's go to my receiver. Because out of browser is in a different security zone than an in browser, there's mm-hmm. a property we use to override that behavior, because out of browser applications are in the trusted zone.
Right. Yeah.
In-browser applications are in the internet zone. I don't know why I didn't get that error message like I was expecting. But when you do get it, there's a property that's called Disable Sender Trust Check. And now that will allow you to cross those boundaries. You can go from the trusted to the internet zone.
So your receiver here is running within the web page?
Correct.
Okay.
And my sender was running out of browser.
Aha. Yeah, it could be that browser security settings you were changing before.
Yeah, I was having
let it run.
These before, and I might have enabled that to not have to be checked.
Sure.
Yeah, so I'll show that one more time just in case for people who missed it. So my sender is out of browser.
You're only getting the out of browser here in Visual Studio because you chose to run it. Normally, an out of browser app would get onto a machine by somebody visiting a web page and either right-clicking and installing, or I think there's an API from within the Silverlight app that you can tell the app to sort of install itself, right?
Yes, I just don't want to go through the trouble of installing it.
Right.
So, but yes, for instance, let's go ahead and open up the receiver, the sender. Where do you go? I can right-click on this, or I can, I guess. Try that again. Well, I guess it installed it for me.
Yeah, when you did Control F5, it did install.
It must have installed for me. But normally, if it was not installed, you would right-click on it and it would say install this application.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it says remove this application because it's already installed. Let me go ahead and open up my receiver again.
Now, I'm going to assume that this also would work if the receiver was running in Firefox, for example.
Correct.
Okay.
In any supported browser.
So it basically shows that there's one Silverlight runtime on the machine that the browser is kind of connected to.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and there we go. So we have one out of browser. So this is actually installed on my machine. And this one is running in Internet Explorer.
Could you go the other way? Could you
have
the sender be in a web, not that you would necessarily do it in the demo here, but you could have the sender be a web page and the receiver be the installed out-of-browser application, right?
Yes, so you can go both ways. You can have out-of-browser or out-of-browser.
Ah, okay.
And that's something that you cannot do with the HTML bridge.
Sure.
Which is why I see that local messaging is just a pretty good solution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is a real cool, simple example. But what about the line of business guys? Like, you know, I have an object that I want to send to another application for it to do something with. Well, close this one out, and I have a sample demonstrating just that. Let's go ahead and take a quick look of how this is set up. So I have a sender application, which all it does is it shows a list of customers. And as I change my selection, I send that customer object to the other application, to my receiver, for him to do something with that object and show me the details. If you look at the UI on the receiver, all it does is going to show me the customer name, phone number, and unit of sales, and that's all he's going to do. And I better create let's do this. Oh, need to open up a new window. Okay, so here's my list.
Mm-hmm.
Entities, these are actual objects. You can see that as I click on it, that object gets sent over to my receiver. My receiver does something with it, and then it sends a response back to my sender saying, this is the one I received.
Sure.
Okay. Now, I haven't got a question, which I'm really surprised I haven't got asked this, but the message size limit, the size limit on a message, there is one, and it's very small. It's 40 kilobytes.
Oh, wow.
So you have to do some tricks. Now, they're not really tricks. They're just, you know, approaches. How would you do this? Well, a message has to be sent as a string. There's no getting around it. So when you have an object that you want to send across the wire, you have to serialize and deserialize that object. Now, the most common ways to do that is XML and JSON.
Right.
A lot of people who work with XML know XML is big, bloaty, it's heavy, and, you know, it can take up memory pretty quick. So I personally prefer JSON. So I have a little infrastructure class here. And I have a little JSON helper which serializes and deserializes my object as I see fit.
Oh, wait.
So nothing really fancy there. But let's look at the sender. So as my selections change on the list, I send the selected item. Okay? So what I do is I serialize my object to get my JSON representation, and I send that string across to my receiver.
Now, you don't do a check there to see if it's the serialized representation is over 40K, but you could.
Yeah, you could. You definitely could.
You could probably chunk it up, too, and then as you get the received back for the first chunk, do the second one. Or am I jumping ahead in the demo? I don't know.
No, I don't cover that. You got to be careful with chunking it up, though, because remember, this is asynchronously, and there's no way to guarantee the order in which the messages are received.
Ah, true. Okay.
But what I've done in the past is I compress the messages.
Oh.
So okay. I will serialize them to a string and then use some, there's lots of free zip utilities out there, and just compress your message, then send it over, decompress it, deserialize, and call it good.
Sure. Okay.
All right. So here's my
review. Another approach could be you could just send a pointer to the record on the server and then have that receiver just pull up that record itself.
Yes. Yeah, normally you don't want to be passing large messages around in the first place. This example, I am passing back an entire entity. It's a small entity. But, you know, like you said, most of the time you might just pass an ID and then the receiver is going to load something from the database based off that ID.
Right.
Okay. So here's my receiver. The only thing that's really new is I'm deserializing the message to get my entity. I'm setting the data context to the entity, because that's what I'm data binding to, and I'm sending my response. It's the only thing that's really happening here. And that's it. That's how you send objects across the wire.
Very nice. So if it were a binary object, like a picture or some other binary data, you could just do a MIME conversion on it?
Yeah, you basically have to do the same thing as you were to do in the web service, some kind of SOAP message.
Okay.
Send it over as a message. All right.
Let's get those questions in, folks. We have about 20 more minutes to explore local messaging with Silverlight. Brian has a question about ReSharper. You notice that in your development environment, or what is it that you're using there for your extra context?
Here I'm using DevExpress's CodeRush.
CodeRush, okay.
And it has some things that ReSharper doesn't give me that I like. I don't want to get off base here, but for instance, I can create a public property of type string like that.
Yeah, nice shortcuts.
So, you know, it's got some nice little features in it that ReSharper doesn't quite have yet. But that's my choice of editor helpers, if you will.
Okay.
Okay. So I have another really cool example. Now, I didn't write this one. I actually got it from Joe Stegman. He wrote up a good example of showing how to transition animations across different applications.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Joe Stegner has three blog posts that are really, really amazing. So you might definitely want to check out. And folks listening to the Geek Speak, we will collate all those resources and put them up as we post the webcast online.
Right.
All right, so can everyone see these four squares I have here?
Uh-huh.
All right, so what I'm going to do is, first off, each one of these is the same instance of an application of the Silverlight app. So we don't have a separate sender receiver in this case. In this example, one application does the sending and receiving to itself. And we have four different instances of that. Each application is given a unique name to be identified when you're dealing with the messages.
Okay.
So I'll demo it, and then we'll kind of go through the code and check it out. So as you can see.
Huh, look at that.
As I click around and create these balls, when it reaches the edge of one app, it's sending messages saying, where am I, where am I? And then everyone's registered and listening for those messages, and depending on the results, it transitions the animation to the next application.
And it doesn't matter which of these instances you are clicking in.
No, I can click down here. I can click in the top right. So, I mean, it can really start opening your eyes and your mind on how you can utilize local messaging in your applications. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Now, how does the control know whether it's an upper left or an upper right page? Is there initialization stuff?
Yep, let's go check that out.
Okay.
So in these init params for each HTML page,
mm-hmm.
he's passing in some values. He's saying this one's name is lower left. My top neighbor is upper left, and my right neighbor is lower right. So he's identifying, you know, where the other applications are relative to itself.
Okay.
And that's what he's using to transition those effects, those animations. So let's check out some of that code. Now, the code's a little hard to read because there's a lot going on in there. I just want to show where those init params are being used.
Mm-hmm.
So in the app.xaml, in the application startup, this is where he's checking those names.
Oh, okay.
And he has his dictionary of neighbor names. So each instance is going to have its own dictionary of its neighbors.
Basically, when the ball reaches the edge of the control, it sends to the right neighbor the message.
Correct. And it knows where to send the message to.
Huh.
So that's where all that magic is happening. Now let's go check out the actual. So he's got a receiver in here. He's got a sender as well. Don't want to send through all this code. But basically, this is where the message is being sent.
Mm.
He's creating his message, which is size, position, velocity, X, velocity, Y, and then colors. He sends that message over to itself, basically. And when it's received, he has code in here based on the message. He splits the message apart. Based on that, he sets the position of the shapes. So that's
very cool.
It's that simple.
Is that a common scenario to have initialization parameters working in conjunction with your messages, your senders, and your receivers?
Well, you know, it really depends on what you're trying to do. I've used init params a couple times. For example, Active Directory authentication.
Okay.
You know, Silverlight doesn't have access to that iPrinciple object.
Right.
I run a little ASP.NET script to get the username and pass it into my application.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't do it that way, you would have to rely on the server to authenticate the user.
Sure.
But then you have to worry about making sure everything's passed with the header names and your WCF services and things like that. So it's just easier to pass in through the init param.
Okay. What happens if the receiver's not there?
The message is attempted to be sent anyways, no matter what. The receiver's not there. It's going to try to send it, but an error will occur if it's not received.
Okay.
And you can get that error. Go to the send complete here. Right here, he's checking for errors.
All right. So since it's an asynchronous send, does it just time out?
No, you'll actually get an error.
Oh, you get it immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So,
hey, Brent, I had another question. It's not directly related, but can I use TCP socket functions to access any IP devices?
Can you use what?
Can I use a TCP socket function to access an IP? On my LAN, if I want to use it from a Silverlight application.
Well, in that case, you're going to have to start getting into full trust applications because you won't have the security authorization to do that. So you'd have to run out of browser, full trust. But once you're full trust, you can do just about anything.
I see. So it would be a lot easier to do a WPF app than Silverlight. Not that it's not possible, but.
Right.
Okay.
So let me just not bring my receiver online. I'm only just going to show my sender.
Okay.
See that?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want the error to occur, you just have to handle it. It's going to check for receivers, and there's no receivers registered on that same channel. It's just going to bomb on you.
Okay.
But you do have that e.error that you can handle. And then you have the data and your stack trace and all that stuff.
Okay. Well, one scenario kind of comes to mind is having maybe a media player application, and maybe if there's markers in the video when they're hit, maybe you send messages to some other Silverlight control on the page or in another window. Have you seen any of those types of applications?
I haven't personally written any of those, but
okay.
That would be an excellent application of this feature here. I mean, you can think of any type of, I'm a line of business guy, so I've done a lot of line of business applications. For instance, let's say you have a dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
The dashboard just has that quick data for you to view data, interpret it, and make a decision. Well, let's say you had that dashboard and in another browser you had another application open, so when you clicked on your dashboard, you got the actual details, you got more detailed information on the other application.
I'm thinking about other scenarios that would tend to be a way that Silverlight controls are delivered to the browser separately, and one would be like SharePoint. And I know, for example, there's some mechanisms for making calls from one SharePoint web part to another. So do you see this maybe being used in scenarios where SharePoint's delivering two different Silverlight controls from two different web parts and getting them to talk to each other?
Oh, most definitely.
Okay.
I mean, that would be another great application of this feature, especially in the line of business world. I mean,
right.
You can get some rich functionality in that type of communication.
Yeah, I'm thinking one step ahead here. Basically, use those KPIs and from SharePoint, tie it up to a Silverlight web part, and then make it a sidebar gadget from Silverlight. I think that'd be super cool.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Well, that's all I really had to show today. Didn't get as many questions as I thought I was going to get.
Yeah, we have. One question from Scott out there. This is a good one. Does inclusion of the messaging increase the zap size, or is it functionality already built into the core runtime?
It's functionality already built into the runtime. It's in the system.windows messaging namespace. So it's
okay.
In that DLL there that's already in the runtime.
Okay.
So one thing to keep in mind, this is only Silverlight. You're not going to use this in WPF. You're not going to use this in an ASP.NET page to try to talk to a Silverlight. In that case, you just use the bridge, the HTML
sure.
For that.
I'm noticing from the bouncing ball example that it's pretty efficient. It looks like it's going to keep almost to real time, so that's a nice thing to be able to rely on.
Yeah, well, keep in mind those messages, I mean, they're tiny. They're small.
Yeah.
So they're going to be responsive.
And what's the limit you said? It's 40 KB, right?
Yeah, 40 kilobytes is the limit.
Wow. Okay.
A couple issues that you might run into. I've seen some scenarios when people try to send messages at application startup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just keep in mind that depending on their sizes, your sending and receiving applications might finish loading at different times. So, you know, even if both applications are small, there's no guarantee that the receiving application will be available when the sending application is ready to send.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, one workaround is just to have the sending application just keep sending messages repeatedly until it finally gets it. Or, you know, you could use the HTML bridge feature there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can use that to sort of have each different control register when it's ready for receiving messages.
Right.
Okay. Are there any significant differences between Silverlight 3 and Silverlight 4 when it comes to the system.windows.messaging namespace?
No, they're the same.
The same, okay.
I can switch this over to a 3.0 or 3.5, Silverlight 3.
And so we can almost make this as an IM client, Silverlight IM client.
Mm-hmm.
On the same machine.
Yep. You know, get two-way communications. It's just a very powerful feature, yet simple to implement. It's very simple.
I'm assuming that given the architecture of Windows Phone 7 applications, this is one of the namespaces that's missing. Is that right? Do you know?
I'm not familiar with the Windows Phone segment, but
okay.
I would lean to agree with you on that statement.
Right. I mean, since there's not a host that's running these instances of Silverlight controls, I don't think that there's a way something in place to support that. So I would guess that it's not there. I mean, we'll do some research on that and post it up to our blog, the GeekSpeak blog, as a follow-up.
Yeah, that'd probably be pretty easy to find out. Just create a little Windows Phone app and see if you can do it.
Right. What other scenarios have you seen this been used in?
You know, I think I basically rattled off all I can think of on the different scenarios that I've seen it used in. I'm sure there's lots of scenarios that people have used it in that I just can't fathom right now, because you really are unlimited on what you can do with it.
Sure.
I mean, if you got a bright idea, there it is at your disposal.
Right. Are there some instances where you might use this between, or you might have a Silverlight application that's what they call headless, where there's no UI, and maybe use that as maybe your local storage of data or something?
Well,
I don't know if you've worked too much with the headless Silverlight applications, but.
Yeah, you know, I don't see why it couldn't work that way. You know, like you said, I haven't seen any headless Silverlight apps. But I don't see why.
They're more common when you're working with the HTML bridge, because there's some scenarios where you might have primarily a JavaScript DHTML-driven UI, but you want to do some real heavy-duty calculation. So you move the calculation code into a Silverlight app that doesn't have any UI, and the JavaScript simply interacts with it.
Oh, right. Yeah, in that case, you'd probably have to use the HTML bridge.
Yeah.
But you can generate the receiver names in JavaScript. You know, you can use, for example, the current date and time to ensure uniqueness.
Okay.
So yeah, you would definitely have to do that through the HTML bridge.
Okay. We've got a question out here from Scott that'll probably bring us up to the end of our hour. But Scott says, any thoughts on how to work around single receiver limitation? Seems like it could be useful in an observer pattern if not for that limitation. He's basically saying that the bouncing ball demo was more complicated because of this message channel that you have to keep track of for each direction the ball is leaving the screen.
Right. Well, you know, I think there's many ways to implement that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep in mind this is a demo code. We're doing bare-bones, simple implementation. But I'm sure that if we got our heads together and really needed to do something complex, we could think of a way to manage that.
Right. Well, I guess you could have maybe a master application be a sender and a receiver, and anytime another receiver comes up, it could notify the master with its ID,
proxy,
and then it could just loop through them somehow, right?
Yeah, he can take the messages, store them in some type of dictionary of some type, and send them out where they need to go based on object state and all that stuff.
Right. It's like a pub sub kind of model.
Yeah.
And if we have just a couple more minutes, we have one more question. I believe this could also be used to create a great monitoring tool between several applications. And I definitely think that's possible, and it's a great use of this technology to do that.
Yeah, no, once again, another good idea, another use for this the simple feature here.
Mm-hmm. I know some of the capabilities of Silverlight at a browser include interaction with COM objects and being able to have a little more access to the file system. So maybe there's a scenario where you could create a very simple server that runs out of browser, and then as instances come up on a web page, it will interact with that guy and allow him to print or do some of the other capabilities that our browser is restricted to.
Yeah, printing is a big pain in the butt in Silverlight personally.
Yeah.
You know, they made a lot of improvements on Silverlight 4, but it's still just not there yet, in my opinion. And that would be another, great use for this, to help mitigate that.
Cool.
But once again, yeah, you got to think when you're talking about printing, and you only have a 40 kilobyte size, you got to think how you're going to get the data you want over to your print server, if you will.
Right. Cool. Well, a lot of good brainstorming going on in the scenario, so that's pretty cool. I always like to see a technology that's kind of simple in its structure and then enables a lot of different possibilities. So I brought us to our wrap-up slide. We've got our blogs listed here. The main GeekSpeak blog is at blogs.msdn.com/geekspeak. We'll post follow-up links and answers to some of the questions and all other relevant resources up there. We've got a couple of GeekSpeak scheduled throughout the month of July and August, so you can check msdngeekspeak.com to see those. And if you want to catch our previous recordings, you can visit our show on Channel 9. I've got my blog listed here, Mithun's blog here, and Brian, we have you as brianlagunas.com.
That's correct.
Do you have any of the sample projects other than the bouncing ball one? Do you have those available for our listeners to download?
Yes, I do. If they go to my blog, and I think it's about three blog posts back, but I'll post them again. But, yeah, they're definitely on my blog right now.
Great. And it's good to know that they work with both Silverlight 3 and 4, so people who haven't quite made the jump yet can take advantage of them. So that's pretty cool. So thanks, Brian, very much for coming on the GeekSpeak. Very cool demos, interesting possibilities.
Thank you, Brian, and I'll definitely see you in the next couple of weeks in Boise.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Mithun, for co-hosting, and we'll turn it over to our webcast producer to do some final wrap-up.